Hughes, a fellow fighter, never met him on the colonnade, and he said, "Dr. Howden, I see you had egg for breakfast this morning." He says, "It's indications are down in front of his vest." And then he said, "No." I said, "I had yesterday morning." Well, and they were in their law school. They had Sonny Jim Staples. He was from Patrick County, by the way. Jingles Curl was in English, very good teacher. He went from here to the University of South Carolina as president. He had seven daughters, and not many of them ever got married. There were other professors. Jack Latney, Dr. Latney, was a very good teacher of history.
And he married someone here, didn't he?
Ms. Junkin. Ms. Junkin lived over at Mulberry Hill. And he had two stepsons, Berkeley and Billy Cox, very fine young men. Both of them were very fine people. Berkeley died a couple of years ago, and Billy Cox is still active. Very fine alumnus.
Dr. Curl was quite a punchster, wasn't he? That's what I
remember. I don't remember about that. I know, however, that he was an interesting teacher. I had epic and lyric poetry with him, and I remember that very well. Then I had Dr. Shannon, too, the father of Dr. Shannon, was president of the University of Virginia for 15 years, and he's on the member of our board of trustees now. Dr. Shannon taught a very fine course in Chaucer. I was supposed to take Anglo-Saxon under Dr. Curl, and then he left. Dr. Shannon came in, and he was a specialist in Chaucer, so I took that course. I think probably the best course I ever had in college. This was, of course, on Chaucer, which was, and I might tell you about an interesting story about the valedictory. I'm given credit for being valedictorian of the class, but that wasn't because I had the highest grade. There were two members of the class that had higher grade. But in those days, the valedictorian was chosen by members of the senior class. And one of the members, Morgan Keaton, was a politician, and he and Dick Foulkes, who became a doctor later, framed up to, Foulkes wanted to be the leader of the final ball, and Keaton wanted to be valedictorian. So they had an election. Foulkes was elected president of the class and lead the final ball, and Keaton would have been the valedictorian. But when the end of the year came, Keaton flunked his degree. So after the baccalaureate sermon at the end of the year, Dean Campbell called us together and said that you don't have a valedictorian. He's failed. He's flunked his degree. And so you probably have to get along without a valedictorian. But at any rate, the members of the class met up in Reed Hall, which was a little auditorium at that time, and they finally resolved the problem by electing me valedictorian under those circumstances. Here, the baccalaureate sermon had already been preached. So I went to Dr. Shannon. He had to approve the valedictory address. At that time, he had that requirement, and he said, "Well, I think it's too late now, probably, to do anything." But we talked a little bit. He said, "You go to your room and write up something, see what you can do, and bring it back to me tomorrow," which I did. And he said, "Well," he thought, "I could get by with that," and he made one or two suggestions. So that way, I happened to be the valedictory speaker of the class.
What year was that?
1915. what I did was certainly nothing profound in what I had to say, but I, for most part, it was poking fun at Dr. Henry Louis Smith. You see, he had a lot of pet phrases that he used. For example, he said he wanted his boys to be locomotives, not boxcars, you know, that sort of thing. And he said he wanted to bring into Washington Lee the cream of the South. So I started out my talk by saying that we were lucky to have gotten in under Dr. Denny the year before Dr. Smith came and bring in all that cream of the South to swamp the campus with the cream of the South. And I mean, just that sort of thing that I went through the rather brief remarks, which seemed to have been acceptable.
When was the commencement held?
They had in the chapel. Had no problem at that time. We could seat everybody that wanted to seat, I think, in the chapel.
And what was the enrollment?
It was around 600. The year I came in, it was 630 students, I think. And then it dropped some because at that time we didn't have any automatic rule and students could come and stay as long as they wanted to, as long as their parents would support them, I guess you might say. Well, when Dr. Smith came, he wrote a lot of these boys that hadn't been doing any work that they didn't come back. And so it cut the enrollment down to 500 and some. And then it began to move back up later, but that was the enrollment. But I think it's interesting to note that they didn't have any on automatic rule. They put in an automatic rule, which meant that the student had to pass half his courses in order to return.
Mr. Latour, what field was Dr. Henry Smith in as a professor before?
Physics. He was physics, and he is given credit for using the first X-ray machine in operation, something like that. Do you have a little book called, let's see, Dr. Smith, this?
No, I don't, sir. He also won a prize, didn't he, during the war for some?
Well, Dr. Smith suggested that they, in propaganda, that they get a large number of balloons and attach the leaflets to these balloons and let them blow over Germany to make an appeal for peace and so on. I don't know, I'm sure. At any rate, he wanted to get a message to the Germans, and so he used the balloons as a message of the carriers of these leaflets over into Germany. And I think it is reported that Woodrow Wilson told him that he was one of the most effective features of the propaganda against the Germans. Dr. Smith was quite an interesting man, and he was a good friend of mine, I must say. I'm very fond of Dr. Smith, and he is good to me in many ways.
He's a good speaker.
Oh, yes. He had a tremendous vocabulary. He had specialized in synonyms, so he used a lot of synonyms, and he's a very, very good speaker. When Virginia gave England a statue of Washington, was it, that he was representing Virginia and went to England to deliver this statue and made an address before the English people. I forgot not just where, but Trafalgar Square, I think somewhere.
Tell us something about the period of Dr. Gaines here. He came in 1929,
yes.
And he succeeded Dr. Henry.
That's right. Dr. Smith was in a very bad accident out in far west California somewhere, out in Washington, I think, maybe. And he was in a very serious accident. And he never was quite the same after that accident. So he retired, and after having been here for, started 1912 up to 1929, I guess, about 28, 29. And then Dr. Gaines came here from Wake Forest. Dr. Smith had come from Davidson. He had gone to school to Davidson and had taught there, and he was president of Davidson. Then when he came here from Davidson, Dr. Gaines came from Wake Forest to Washington, D.C. And he was, of course, a very popular man. He was an excellent speaker, one of the best. I've never heard a man in my life that could hold an audience any better than Dr. Gaines. He was just a wonderful orator and speaker. One of the last orators of the South, really, in many ways. You've seen the cartoon which John Chapman drew about in the chapel, showing the Dr. Gaines speaking and the common statue rising up to listen to Dr. Gaines. That was an excellent cartoon, John Chapman.
And Dr. Gaines always taught a class too, as president.
Not always, but he did teach a Bible as literature. He had an excellent grasp of that subject, and he was really a gifted teacher as well as speaker and president.
Was he trained to be a professor of English or history?
Yeah, English. He was a professor of English. And he taught at Mississippi State, where he met Mrs. Gaines. She was the daughter of the dean, she was a rather frail person, and she didn't go to college, I believe, but they had asked him to serve as her tutor in English. And so then she was somewhat younger than he, but he fell in love with her and they were married. And so they had three sons when they came to Washington, D.C.
And all three of those sons were teachers at one time, professors at one time.
Yes, they're all in the field of education. And two of them are still at the University of Arizona, teaching and well in Pembroke is in administration, and Edwards teaching history.
Didn't Dr. Gaines write quite a classic volume at one time on a Southern topic?
Yes, his book is well known. I forgot the title of it now, but it has to do with literature in the South.
And he had a great ability to raise money for the university. And he raised more money, possibly, than any one president up to his time.
Oh yes, I think so. I had a little summary of things that he did along that line for the Board of Trustees. I read that several years ago, hoping that they would name the library for Dr. Gaines because of the fact that his acquaintance with Mrs. DuPont, Mr. and Mrs. DuPont, was very important. I think that Dr. Gaines went to, a Washington alumnus, a lawyer by the name of Glasgow, Mr. William A. Glasgow, was Mr. DuPont's lawyer, and he had the idea of getting Dr. Gaines to meet the DuPonts, which he arranged and did, and they became very fond of Dr. and Mrs. Gaines. And this is after Mr. DuPont died. Mrs. DuPont continued her interest in Washington and Lee and the Gaines family, so she gave Washington Lee about $6 or $7 million altogether, which is quite a some when we needed it, really. Those were hard days. And when the end of the school year, I think she'd asked Dr. Gaines how much deficit there was, and she'd give enough to take it up. Well, another interesting thing was that the DuPonts, Mrs. DuPont, had a party and invited Dr. and Ms. Gaines and invited Mr. Pratt to the party. And that's when Dr. Gaines met Mr. Pratt. They rode home from Wilmington on the train together and got struck up quite a friendship. And so Mr. Pratt invited Dr. and Ms. Gaines down to Fredericksburg, and then they invited him up to Lexington, and they saw a good deal of each other. And I recall particularly once when Dr. Gaines made a trip down to see Mr. Pratt, and he came back and said he had a very pleasant visit. He didn't know whether it amounted to anything or not, but he said he had a very pleasant visit down there. And within several days, a week or two after that, he got a check from Mr. Pratt for $50,000, which was quite a nice sum for those days. And that was to provide for scholarships. It was anonymous. Nobody was supposed to know where it came from, and nobody knew for a long time, I guess, that it was Mr. Pratt. But that was the beginning of that relationship, which eventuated in the tremendous gift of $12 million, which came to Mr. Pratt's estate eventually.
And his, he was in business. What business did
he? He was in General Motors. He was with the DuPont people, and then General Motors, I think DuPont more or less took over General Motors. I'm not sure just what that relationship was, but anyway, his wealth was accumulated through General Motors. A good thing he did it then rather than now. And then there's another gift. Of course, that these two I've mentioned that Dr. Gaines had so much to do with, and then for
Ms.
Kelly Evans. Dr. Gaines had a friend named Jones, who was with Coca-Cola people, and of course Ms. Evans had tremendous stock in the Coca-Cola people company. And I don't recall Dr. Gaines asked his friend Jones about meeting Mrs. Evans, and he said, well, I can arrange it. But see, Ms. Evans lived over at Hot Springs, had a home there, and he said, you're too late though. So Dr. Gaines told him it's too late, since she's already arranged disposition of her estate. But at any rate, they did arrange the meeting, and Mrs. Evans was charmed by Dr. Gaines like many other people had been. And so the outcome of that was that she left, she gave Dr. Gaines a good deal. I know one of the things that she gave him for St. Duverne was a ring, about $30,000 ring. But anyway, that her first gift was $10,000 to surface and tennis courts. I remember that very well. Then, of course, another is the student center that a woman, Ms. Fairfax from Roanoke, he got acquainted with her, and she gave the money, or left the money for her family. I don't know just what the whole relationship with Ms. Fairfax, I remember meeting her on the campus, and she gave, what she gave was to, called the Fairfax Lounge, you see, over there, which, let's see, what is the, I forgot the name of the plaque on the front there, that, when you go into the cockpit of that, there's a plaque on the side that names the people who gave money for that.
Would you go back now and tell us a few of the interesting, colorful professors? Like the gentleman we were asking about earlier, who had classes at Doc's Corner Store.
Oh, yeah. That was Professor Crowball, who was very liberal, see, and he had classes down at the corner store where the boys go down and drink beer if they want to, I guess. And that was considered quite inappropriate. But they charged him with, well, they said that he got his wife off the picket line. She looked as if she had been on the picket line or something. She was rather an odd person, and Crowball was an interesting fella, but he was had these Bolshevik ideas, people thought at that time. They used to have a kind of a club, almost a club, up at Le Crumbs. At the back of the store, there was a kind of a elevated section there where they served meals and lunch. So three or four or a dozen faculty members would go up there for lunch. And they called that the Bikram Shabiki group of professors, because they would settle a good many questions and have a good deal of influence in faculty meetings as a result of this group, which met there regularly. You know, they settled a lot of questions. They were making policy for the university, I guess you might say. But that was an interesting group. Of course, Larry Watkins was another interesting member of our faculty that wrote the book called On Borrowed Time, and used the he sold the movie rights to that for $25,000, and he built the house as Dr. Brush lives now.
Could you tell us something about Hank Williams? He was the most colorful character when I arrived here.
Well, he was one of my good friends. I had him in class, and then he went into the, I don't remember after he graduated or not, but he became a, went to, let's see, where did he went? He out in India, in that direction somewhere, as the representative of the American Consular Service or something of the sort. When he came back here and was looking for a job, and I recall it, he had thought he was going to get a job somewhere in Kentucky, probably at Center College or something out there, and then it turned out somebody else got the job, so when school started, he didn't have any job, and he came over here looking for work. So, at that time, Dr. Riley needed somebody to teach two sections of history, and I needed somebody in two sections of political science. So we merged our wishes together and employed Hig to teach.
Yes. Sure. Yes.
Hig was a very popular fellow because he had very strong opinions. He was a dedicated Democrat, and he was a dedicated bachelor too, I guess. He didn't like the idea of faculty members getting extra pay because of the number of children they had. he was pretty conservative in with regard to matters of that kind, but he would
he was a most popular teacher.
Very popular, and he was very lenient with a lot of boys too, and that was one of the big basis for his popularity. But he was a very likable fellow. I mean, we had offices side by side for years, and I was very fond of Hig. And
he lived. I ate by him at the table, at the Barclay table, yes. And I always remember him there as one of the interesting persons that had conversation.
Yes, he was always good for conversation and expressing his views, which were not always.
Didn't he have an apartment for many years with Mrs. Clarkson?
Yes, he did, and he died there in Mrs. Clarkson's house, and just died sitting in his chair.
There was a wonderful picture of him in the old Union,
yes,
over the fireplace,
right,
with him with his pipe.
That's,
and it was so characteristic. I wonder where that picture is
it,
today.
It ought to be around there somewhere. I don't know. They've taken the pictures out of Washington Hall. I don't know what that was for. So it looks like we've about used up our time here, haven't we?
Well, fine. We certainly appreciate your cooperation.
I don't think this is much of a contribution, but...
I do.
I think it's great.
I think it is too. It just...